We are on the second last section of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. From text 37 to 45, the discussion between Lord Krishna and Arjuna is on the topic of the fate of the unsuccessful yogi, Bhrashta yogi, who has sincerely begun the path of yoga, is sincerely practicing, but somehow or other, due to worldly temptations, old habits and so on, he strays away from the path. Arjuna's question is, what is the fate of such a yogi? What happens? He has given up the material world. He has given up material pleasures for the sake of pursuing spiritual life, and now he has not attained success in spiritual life also. So he is neither here nor there. Krishna begins by assuring Arjuna that a person who has performed devotional service to the Lord, has embarked upon love and devotion, is never the loser. He can never attain a bad destination. Partha naiveha namutra vinashastasya vidyate nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgatim tata gacchati. He says, a person who has done good, who has done auspicious things, kalyana krit, that is the most auspicious thing being devotional service, he can never attain durgati, or a low or a bad destination. Then Krishna goes on to explain, in the 41st verse, what happens to such yogis after death. There are two kinds of yogis. Those, number one, who fall down or who die after a short practice of yoga, practicing yoga for a short time, not very advanced on the path. And the second category are those who have practiced yoga for a long time, and those who have advanced to a fair degree on this path of yoga. When they die, when death interrupts their progress in yoga, both the neophyte yogi as well as the advanced yogi attain different destinations, as Lord Krishna explains here. So what is the destination of the first category of yogi who has performed yoga for a short time, who has not advanced very much on the path of yoga? Krishna explains in the 41st verse of this chapter. He says, Prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati samah shuchinam shrimatam gehe yoga bhrashto bhijayate. He explains that for such a person who has fallen away from the path of yoga, he attains to the higher planets like Swargaloka and other planets, where the lifespan is very, very long compared to the lifespan on the earth. For thousands upon thousands of years, the residents of the higher planets live and they enjoy a much higher degree of material pleasure than we can do on the earth. Of course, ultimately material pleasure is material pleasure, but nevertheless the degree of enjoyment that is available in the higher planets is much higher, much finer, and they enjoy in this way for a long time. Now who attains these planets? Punya kritam lokan. Only those who have actually performed punya, like Ashwamedha Yajna, who have done various sukritis, they attain to these higher planets like the Swargaloka on the strength of their accumulated piety, sukriti, depending on how much stock of punya they have accumulated. They are able to enjoy the higher, finer material delights of the spiritual world, of the And as they enjoy and as the time passes, they keep on diminishing that stock of punya. When that stock of punya is depleted, it comes down to practically zero or to a very low degree. Kshine punya mrti lokam vishanti, then they have to come down again to the earth planet. So this planet is available only for those, as is described here, who have performed punya. Punya kritam lokan. Nobody else can achieve these planets. We see in the Ramayana there is a description of how Trishanku, a king on earth, wanted to ascend to Swargaloka, and he went to Vasishtha first. Vasishtha Muni refused, his sons also refused, and finally he went to Vishwamitra, who harbored some ill feeling against Vasishtha Muni, a feeling of competitive envy. So he said, on the strength of my yoga, my yogic siddhis and my powers, I will make you ascend to the higher Swargaloka. And Trishanku started rising higher and higher. When Indra saw that Trishanku is coming here without the qualification of having sufficient punya, then he sent him back. He did not accept him here. And when Trishanku was falling down in the sky towards the earth again, he again cried for help to Vishwamitra Muni, who again sent him up. And Indra sent him back. Finally, the Devas had to plead with Vishwamitra Muni when he threatened to create a whole new, practically a whole new universe with new demigods and everything. Then finally he created a separate planet for Trishanku, and Trishanku lies there in between the heaven and the earth. Therefore today, if anybody is in between a situation neither here nor there, he is compared to Trishanku. So we see that unless one has sufficient stock of punya, one cannot approach those planets. Srila Prabhupada used to explain at least, they claim that they have sent their men to the moon. The Shastras explain that the moon is actually a heavenly planet. It is a prapya, it's a punyakritam loka. Loka. It is a loka where heavenly beings, they are also jivatmas who have material bodies, but their bodies are very fine. They attain to the moon planet, Chandraloka, and enjoy many heavenly material pleasures like drinking of somaras and so on. And Prabhupada explained that it is not possible by mechanical means of rockets and spaceships to go to the moon. And if at all they have gone somewhere, it is not the moon. They have been deceived. And so many people have started coming out now declaring that the actual moon landing and so on was a big hoax, that it was just stage managed somewhere in America in some desert and so on. Many people are coming up and writing books and giving interviews and so on. So Prabhupada said that I am not a scientist, I am not an astronaut, but I can say with great certainty that they never went to the moon because I have faith in the Shastra, and the Shastra says that only those with punya can go up, and the process is to first die. One has to die, the soul has to leave the body, and then the soul gets a new birth in the Swargaloka. Then it is possible to attain Swargaloka. Not in this life, to simply go up in the same material body by rockets and spaceships. Of course, there are some exceptions with very, very extraordinary personalities like the Pandavas and Arjuna, for example. Arjuna actually visited Swargaloka, and he sat next to his father Indradev in the court. And he also saw Apsara Urvashi over there, but he saw her as mother. And finally, after obtaining blessings of Indra and getting many weapons from him, he returned. But these are very exceptional cases. Ordinary people, especially in Kali Yuga, they cannot attain to the higher planets in this life by simply some mechanical means. So having attained to these higher planets, they will live there for thousands of years, and then they are born here in some family, in two kinds of families that is explained here. But before that, these two categories of yogis, neophyte and advanced, let us discuss a little more about them. Yoga or any path of spiritual practice can lead to two destinations. One is material enjoyment, and the second is liberation. For those who are not sufficiently advanced, if death interrupts their practice of yoga, then after death they attain to the higher planets where they can get material enjoyment, because they are not yet fully purified. So those material tendencies that still are there in the heart can be fully utilized in Swargaloka for enjoyment, and then they come back and get some other births, which we will talk about shortly, which is described in verse number 41. Those who are perfected yogis, on the other hand, they attain liberation. Sometimes, however, it is seen that even if a yogi is very mature, almost perfected, but somehow by providence, the desire to enjoy material pleasures may still be there, or it may come back again. In that case, the yogi then succumbs to that. He enjoys material pleasures even here in this life, and after having sufficiently enjoyed and not found satisfaction in them, he renounces them once again and comes back to the spiritual path where he was in the very same life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one great acharya in our sampradaya, he gives two examples for this. One is the example of Kardama Muni, and the second is the example of Saubhara Muni. Both examples are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As far as Kardama Muni was concerned, he was a great Prajapati, descendant of Brahma, and he was told by Brahma to procreate, because Brahma was the first person in the universe and his job was to create all the planets, to create the 84 lakh species of life, and then to see that all these different planets are inhabited by all these different 84 lakh species of life, and that every different jiva or spirit soul who is destined to take birth here in this universe because of karma coming from the previous creation, he gets an appropriate body, an appropriate planet, an appropriate environment in which to continue his cycle of karma and reaction to that karma. So Brahma, therefore, from his own body and mind and intelligence, by his own Shakti, he creates so many living entities who are his sons. And some of these sons are called Prajapatis because they are meant to procreate, to create further progeny or children to populate the universe. Because after all, the universe has to be filled up. So where will the population come from? So Brahmaji creates from his own body these children. These children intermarry, and then they create further children who also intermarry with each other's cousins and so on, and then therefore the progeny is created. So Kardama Muni was instructed to perform austerities for the sake of obtaining progeny. So not very happily, a little reluctantly, he agreed. He went to the forest. He performed tapasya, penance, for many, many years. Finally, the Supreme Lord Sri Hari appeared before him in his four-armed form on the back of Garuda, and he was still in the sky. And as he gave his darshan to Kardama Muni, Kardama Muni offered his obeisances, his words of respect and prayer, and requested the Lord to be granted a good wife who could assist him. The Lord immediately said, yes, whatever desires that you have in your heart will be certainly fulfilled. And within a short time, Swayambhuva Manu, who is the administrator of the universe, the son of Brahma, he will come to you with his daughter Devahuti, and he will offer her marriage, offer her hand to you in marriage. So Kardama Muni was very happy. The Lord also gave one more blessing. He said that I will myself appear as your son at a certain time. So this was such a great blessing. So 2 days later, as per the prediction of the Lord, Swayambhuva Manu — the word Manu is important because the word man or Manushya comes from that. So he is the origin of all human beings, of the Manushya, human species. So Swayambhuva Manu came with his wife Shatarupa and his daughter Devahuti, who was very, very beautiful. And Swayambhuva Manu came and spoke to Kardama Muni and explained that my daughter and I and our family, we have heard your glories from Narad Muni and other sages who have come to our assembly. And since then, my daughter has fixed her mind upon you. So please accept her hand in marriage because you are a very qualified sage, a qualified Brahmana. It is a great honor for someone like me to offer my daughter in marriage to you. So Kardama Muni also happily accepted the proposal. But he put a condition that as soon as children are born, I will leave for the forest again for a life of renunciation. So that was agreed upon. Swayambhuva Manu and Shatrupa left. Devahuti stayed, serving Kardama Muni for many, many, many years as he performed and continued to perform his austerities. Because she led a very austere life along with her husband, sleeping on the floor and wearing very simple clothes, rags, eating simple food, she became malnourished. But because she served in such a nice way, Kardama Muni became very pleased. Whatever spiritual advancement he had made, she would automatically receive. That divine consciousness which he had by virtue of his penances and worship of the Supreme Lord would automatically be obtained by her simply because she had served him nicely. So therefore it is explained that if the husband is a great devotee and if the wife simply serves him, even if she has not done a lot of austerities, she also automatically gets the benefit of the tapasya or the penances and worship performed by the husband. And after that, when it was time to create progeny, Kardama Muni, from his yogic powers, he created a whole city that was flying in the air. A whole flying city, not just one aeroplane which can accommodate 100 or 200, 300 people. It was a huge city. Even Kardama Muni was astonished to see all the wonderful facilities that were available in that airplane. And in this airplane, he took Devahuti to all corners of the universe on a sightseeing tour. And they went and enjoyed in many, many places, even in the heavenly planets and so on. Finally, 9 daughters were born. And after that, when he was about to leave, she said that the daughters will all get married and go away. Then what about, who will look after me? So then there was another child, this time it was a son. And that son was, as the Lord predicted, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord himself. And he was called Kapila Dev. So when Kapila Dev was born, Kardama Muni, he left his house, took sannyas, and Kapila Muni looked after his mother. And the instructions that he gave his mother are a very famous set of instructions given in the 3rd canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very, very wonderful dialogue between the two. Wonderful questions and wonderful answers. In this way, Kardama Muni, although such an advanced, almost perfect yogi, he also developed a desire to enjoy material pleasures, and he did so. Actually, if it were not for this, then how would the world have become populated? So ultimately, we understand that this was the Lord's arrangement. Swayambhuva Manu also had 2 other daughters, who were called Akuti and Prasuti. Akuti was married to a sage called Ruchi, and Swayambhuva Manu put the condition that their son should be given back to him, and he would adopt that son. And because he knew that that son would be an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. And sure enough, the son of Ruchi and Akuti was Yajna, who was an incarnation of the Lord. And they also had a daughter, Dakshina. Yajna was adopted by Swayambhuva Manu. And finally, Yajna and Dakshina were married, and they had several children who went on to become a class of demigods called the Tushitas. Yajna himself went on to become Indra. Sometimes, when no proper person is available to occupy the post of Indra, then the Lord himself has to do it. And in this way the progeny was created from the second daughter. Another daughter, Prasuti, was married to Daksha, who was the Prajapati, another son of Brahma. And they had 16 daughters, of whom 13 were married to Dharma, the Devata Dharma. One was given to Agni, one was given to the residents of Pitraloka, and one was given in marriage to Lord Shiva. She was Sati. You all know the story of Lord Shiva and Sati. The word Sati comes from her. When Daksha did not invite Lord Shiva for a ceremony in his house, Sati went alone. And she felt very insulted because her husband had been insulted and she burnt her own body. So anyway, the 16 daughters of
Daksha, the 16 daughters of Daksha and Prasuti were married off to different sages, to different devatas. And Swayambhu Manu also had two sons, Priyavrat and Uttanapad. All these descriptions are given in the wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam. And the whole universe population expanded. These children again had in turn further children. It is interesting that some of these couples didn't have only human children. Some of them had children from other species. That is how the 84 lakh species were created. Which goes to show that if we try to analyze from the modern biological point of view, for those of you who are students of science, that their DNA, RNA structure must have been something very unique, far different from what we understand for human beings on the earth. Because here, from whatever experience we have, one species, two members of one species, when they procreate, they can create progeny or children of the same species. You do not see two humans coming together and some other species coming as a child, or with birds or animals or anything. But we find here in the Srimad Bhagavatam a description that some of these couples came together and all the different classes of insects, birds, reptiles, etc. were also created in this way. So how to understand? This is a big puzzle. So scientists should try to understand. They should try to probe deeper and see how these things are possible. So they were of a higher dimension because they lived on the higher planets. So such things were possible for them. We have very limited experience of the form of the human being as understood on the earth. So in this way, the entire population of the world, so by most of these people were yogis, they were great rishis, and they were also very advanced. But they also had some desire for enjoyment, so that facility was given to them. And then after that, all of them, after their duties had been performed, their children had been born and married away, their responsibilities over, then they returned to a life of renunciation. The second example that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is of Saubhari Muni, who was also a sage who had been practicing yoga for many, many years, thousands of years. In order to avoid being disturbed in his yoga practice, he was practicing yoga anayam. He happened to see two fish mating, and his material desires were aroused in his heart, and he went to the court of King Mandhata and requested the hands of his daughters in marriage. But because he was very old and ugly, the king said, "You better ask my daughters. If they agree, I don't mind." Because the king directly did not want to say no, because he feared some curse from that Muni. So when Saubhari Muni went to the daughters, they immediately disagreed, because who would want to marry an old ugly man? So finally Saubhari Muni understood the reason. By his yogic powers, he developed a very young, beautiful body, and then all the daughters of King Mandhata on their own wished to marry him. And then he married, he expanded himself into 50 parts by his yogic powers, and in this way for a long time he lived in that kind of household life, enjoying different opulences. He came to his senses and understood that I have simply wasted my life. Where was I performing austerities and tapasya for thousands of years, even going under the water? And how is it that I got distracted like this and went on the path of enjoyment for so many years simply by just seeing some fish together? So such are the examples of yogis who are mature in the practice of yoga, but by providence somehow the desires for material enjoyment come again, and they enjoy and come back in this life to a life of renunciation and austerities. So the question here is of those who die when the yoga practice is not complete. So in the first category, those whose yoga practice is in a very neophyte stage, not very advanced, they attain to the higher planets, as is explained in this 41st verse, and then they are reborn. Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Bhrashto Abhijayate. So the yoga bhrashtas, they are born either in a family of shuchis. Shuchis means actually brahmanas, but more accurately it means those who are of good character and conduct, who are very cultured. In such families, a yogi may take birth after having enjoyed heavenly delights for many, many, many thousands of years, or else he may take birth in a family of very wealthy businessmen, or in a family of royalty like the kings and so on, Srimatam. And in both conditions, he gets some opportunity to continue his spiritual life, although it may not always be very, very favorable because of the opulence and the conditions, so some degree of struggle is involved for that person to come up to the platform of Krishna consciousness again. But nevertheless, the opportunity is there. And every Bhrashta Yogi, after going through the heavenly planets, must take birth in one of these two different kinds of families. So in this way, Krishna is explaining here what happens to those yogis who have not advanced very much and died. Now the second category, what about those yogis who have done a significant amount of advancement on the path of yoga, but somehow or other death has interrupted? That description is given by the Lord in text 42. So kindly let us chant text 42. Athava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadhi durlabhataram loke janma yadidrisham. Athava yogina. Or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. Or, please repeat, So having given the destination of the first category of yogis, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Abhijayate, now Lord Krishna talks about the other option, Athava. Or, if the yogi has been very advanced, he has been performing devotional service or yoga practice for a long time, then what happens to him? Yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam. He takes birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists, dhimatam, whose intelligence is very vast, who are very wise, who are great in wisdom. So this is a great advantage. It is very rare also, as Lord Krishna explains here. Etat hi durlabha taram. Durlabha means rare. Durlabha taram means very, very rare. Loke janma yat idrisham. This kind of janma, this kind of birth, to be born in a family of great devotees, of great transcendentalists, is a very rare thing in this world. And therefore that is given only for those who have been practicing this yoga path for a long time, who have been very advanced on this path. For such people only this high birth is reserved. Why is it considered such a fortunate birth? Why is it reserved for only few people? Why is it better than even the first option of being born in a family of Shuchinam, Srimatam, Gehe? Because in the first case, the struggle is more. Here, the jiva takes a body in a family which is already spiritually advanced. So right from childhood, there is a very spiritual atmosphere in the house. There is spiritual culture there. There are very deep sanskars of spiritual consciousness that are imbibed in the mind and heart of the child. And therefore, because of this, when the child grows up, he or she can become a very great yogi or a devotee. So such things are very, very rare. We see here that children who are born in a family of devotees are very fortunate. We should not see from the material point of view whether somebody is very materially educated, somebody is materially very wealthy, or from a so-called high caste or a low caste. These things don't matter in spiritual practice, in genuine devotional service. But if somebody is sincerely, genuinely, seriously practicing Krishna consciousness, and in that family a child is born, then we can understand that this is something very rare. That means this child in the previous life has been an advanced yogi. Because of this, that child has got the opportunity to be born in such a family. It is even better to be born in a devotee's family who may not be in a high caste, who may not be wealthy, may not be materially educated. it is better to have such a birth than to have a birth in an aristocratic family that is wealthy, with lot of education, beauty and other things, where there is no spiritual culture. Because ultimately, in this second case, when there is no spiritual culture, there will be a lot of sinful activity being performed, as a result of which that jiva will have to go to the hellish planets, and after that to animal and lower species of life for punishment. So what is the value of a high aristocratic birth now, with wealth, beauty, enjoyment and all facilities, if the next births are going to be in hell and as worms and cats and dogs? What is the value? Better to have a simple birth, a so-called low birth, a poor birth, if it is in a family of devotees. Brahmaji also prays like this. All the great acharyas also pray like this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I don't even want to be born as Brahma, if at all I have to get a second birth now. Devotees of the Lord are destined to go back to the spiritual world. But as surrendered devotees of the Lord, they always pray that if you wish, my Lord, I don't mind if you give me another birth here, or if you give me permanent residence here in the spiritual world, in the material world. All I seek is that I should have the opportunity to serve you and your devotees, and to hear your glories and chant your names. That's all I want. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also prays that I don't want a birth of a non-devotee Brahma, and rather I would choose to be a worm in the house of a devotee. What to speak of being the child of a devotee? I don't mind being the worm in the house of a devotee, because then you eat Krishna prasadam, you get the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, you hear the holy names and the descriptions of the glories of the Lord, and in this way one becomes purified, one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, and eventually attains to the spiritual world. So birth is very important in anything, because it is that birth that will give us our culture, it will give us our sanskars in this life. A person is made up, a person's character is made up of several factors. One of the factors is the past impressions or sanskars that he brings with him from his previous life. The second factor is the kind of family upbringing that he has. And the third factor, of course, is the association that he has outside the family, in the school, in the college, in the society around him. So all these factors combine eventually to create the personality or character of anybody. So therefore, this birth, yoginam kule bhavati dhimatam, is considered durlabhataram, very, very rare. So the little children of our devotees who are always running here and there, sometimes creating disturbance during the lectures, we should understand that these are very special souls. They have got birth hearing Hare Krishna mantra, and whole life they will be spending in that atmosphere. Right from childhood they have never eaten anything but Krishna prasad. Right through the school, college days, they will only eat Krishna prasad. Nowadays it is such a hard task to convince people to even give up non-vegetarian food, to give up alcohol, to give up cigarettes and such things. But here you have a fortunate child who is born in a spiritual culture. Right from childhood he is glorifying the Lord, seeing the beautiful form of the Lord, participating in satsang, eating Krishna prasadam. So what a rare fortune. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, in a very humble and sweet way, that both his own spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as well as he himself, had a good fortune. As far as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was concerned, he was a Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who was himself a great Vaishnava Acharya, not an ordinary devotee. He was a pure devotee of the Lord, a Nitya Siddha Jiva who came here to accomplish the purposes of the Lord, for spreading the message of the Lord. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur had 13 children, all of them devotees of the Lord. And in the house, there was a completely pure spiritual devotional atmosphere. Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains that when he used to return to his home after work, he was a district magistrate. So when he used to return home, he would feel that he has returned to Goloka Vrindavan, the kingdom of Lord Krishna. because everywhere the service of the Lord was going on. The family members, wife, children, everyone was performing arati in the evening. They were chanting, doing kirtan. Krishna Prasad was being offered. Someone was reading some shastras, the Bhagavatam and so on. Nowadays, unfortunately, when a person comes home, he doesn't see his family members, wife, children, etc. engaging in these activities. He sees them rather sitting in front of the television, seeing the cinema, or simply wasting time here and there. So, see the difference. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born in a family of transcendentalists. He was also born in the holy land of Jagannath Puri. And when he was just born, that was around the Rath Yatra time, and the Rath passed in front of their house, because their house was on that main road where the Rath passes. His mother took the child out to let him have darshan of Jagannath and to let Jagannath's blessings come on the child, because they were also great devotees. The Pandas took the child up onto the Rath, and miraculously one of the garlands on Lord Jagannath's body, it fell onto the child. And it was a very, very auspicious thing. And in this way, right from childhood, Bhaktivinoda Thakur trained Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose name was Bimala Prasad, very, very nicely in Krishna consciousness. Bimala Prasad eventually remained a Naishtika Brahmachari. He never got married. He was a very, very great scholar even at a young age. And often he would represent his father in many, many philosophical forums. And one time he spoke at a very learned assembly of Brahmanas, and he spoke very strongly against the concept of being Brahmana by birth. And he established, by quoting many, many passages from the Shastras and by logic, that a Brahmana is not to be understood by birth, but rather by activities, by qualities. In this way, because of this wonderful upbringing of devotion, one can understand what a fortunate situation it was. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in fact, very much encouraged and even pushed his son to take initiation from Gaurkishordas Babaji Maharaj. And when Gaurkishordas Babaji Maharaj, out of humility, refused to initiate anyone, he didn't want to accept any disciples. Bhaktivinoda Thakur refused to accept Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati back in the house till he got initiated. And finally, having pity on this young boy, Gaurkishordas Babaji Maharaj initiated him as his only disciple. In Srila Prabhupada's own case, he was born Abhay Charan Day. His father's name was Gaur Mohan Day. He was also a very great Vaishnava. Every day, a minimum of 4 sadhus every day, Prabhupada himself says. He was brought up in a culture of being hospitable to sadhus. The deities of Radha Krishna were worshipped very devoutly by his father every day in the house. Even as a young boy, infant, he led all the children of the neighborhood in a Rath Yatra festival, and they had their own small little raths made of wood, which were quite small, not like our big rath which we have here. And they had a big festival, and prasadam was distributed. So such were the activities that this young boy was doing. Today's young children are more interested in video games or in playing other things, but here we can see what a difference it was because of being born in a spiritually cultured family. As he became a young man and he passed his high school, his mother wanted him to become a barrister in London, but his father said no, because he may go there and get spoilt, he may go there and start developing bad habits. I don't mind if my son is not materially very successful or if he doesn't earn a lot of money. I want my son to become a great Vaishnava. I want to become a great devotee of Srimati Radharani. So in this way, because of the strong impression sanskars given by his parents, particularly his father, Prabhupada says, I also had that fun, and I could also go on the path of Krishna consciousness right from childhood. So such things are very, very useful, very, very rare in this world. It makes us also realize the importance of sanskars for young children in Krishna consciousness. For those whose children have taken birth before they came into serious spiritual life, better late than never. One can start trying to create a very spiritual atmosphere in the house so that at least now the children get some very good sanskars. But that is not possible unless the parents themselves become spiritually very educated. So therefore here Krishna concludes in two verses. One for the neophyte yogis, the other for the advanced yogis. And then for both of them, what happens after they take birth, whether in the family of Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe or whether Yoginam Kule Bhavati Dhimatam, either of the two situations, what happens after they have got this birth, that Lord Krishna will discuss from the next verse onwards, text 43, for about 3 or 4 verses thereafter. That we will discuss in subsequent classes. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We will have darshan and after that we will have question answers. Next Saturday we will not have our usual Bhagavad Gita class, because from this coming Monday there is a 1 week Bhagavad Gita course in English that will be conducted, 7 day course, starting from Monday and ending on Sunday evening, every evening. So the details are available there, the brochure is available. For those of you who would like to attend, this is in English only. You can take the forms, register, etc. There are no fees for this course, but registration is essential. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.